Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Discover a New Beginning Blog Talk Radio. Our show, Phenomenally Yours, broadcasts weekly on Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. This show is inspired by and dedicated to all the phenomenal men and women who are making a difference. Whether someone recognizes your worth or not, know that you are awesome. Our guest today is Jamar Stokely, founder of Royal Apex Creations, LLC, and Rack Speaks. Jamar was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan, and he was the epitome of one who had experienced cross-cultural issues. At a young age, he faced being bullied, abused, molested, and witnessed domestic violence. Overwhelmed with depression and anger, he attempted suicide, dealt with masochism, and had anxieties that led to failed domestic relationships and many career changes as an adult. Even while going through all the trials he faced, he remained motivated to helping others. He has always considered helping people to be good medicine for the soul. After multiple counseling sessions and applied techniques, it was only through a thorough self-examination that he discovered the power to overcome deeply rooted obstacles. For over a decade, Jamar has worked in several industries, including but not limited to sales, real estate, business-to-business, account management, and entertainment. He had a habit of expeditiously advancing beyond the entry-level positions he would initially start out in. However, no matter the advancements, the only time he really felt at peace was when he helped others overcome obstacles and progress toward their success. This was the theme of his life, even as he was undergoing his own extreme trials. While he maintained regular work, he still did life coaching, tutored, mentored, and became a spokesperson for youth in sports, political meetings, and other events. Soon after gaining stability and obtaining what most would call a successful life based on career and finances, Jamar still felt that void. Eventually, he came to grips with the fact that in order to truly benefit from helping individuals to their success, he would need to be free from the boundaries of traditional work. So within the first quarter of 2014, Jamar stepped out of that 9-to-5 work environment and became an entrepreneur. 2 years later, Jamar founded Royal Apex Creations and its public speaking firm, RAK Speaks. He is joined by several members with diverse backgrounds who share that same passion of seeing others succeed in life. Jamar created this platform in philanthropy to help expose individuals on how to obtain the opportunities that could lead them to their success. The best way to achieve that goal as a company is by using its most powerfully influential tool, that being their voice. So Jamar created a formula as the single foundation that would allow the company and its presenters to deliver an all-inclusive assistance. He and his team channel and position their experiences into a guide for their audience to use to help optimize their ability to create their own opportunities and to improve their lives. He continues to find enjoyment in any role he plays in pushing people to their success. His therapy is now his obsession and his business. Welcome, Jamar, to our show. We are so pleased to have you join us this evening. Welcome to our show.
Good evening, Miss Linda Williams. Let me tell you, you reading my bio did something to me when I heard that come through your voice. It hit me as if I wasn't hearing about myself. But, my apologies. Listening to it, I'm like, oh, this poor soul, and I'm so glad he's doing better.
We all come from somewhere, Jamar. We all have. Yep. We all have a past. We all have baggage that we bring with us from our past. But it's what we do with that baggage that counts. You know, we're all going to go through the storm. And so while we're in the storm, we can't concentrate on the storm. We have to look at what's the storm going to produce. The rain comes to produce flowers. That's the beauty of the storm. And the beauty of your storm is your Royal Apex Creations, your RAK Speaks, because you're giving back. And you're helping someone who's currently in the storm see that there's joy on the other side of what they're going through. So, you know, the poor soul that was read in your bio is no longer that poor soul.
That's right. That's right.
That's a good. So,
let me
say
your phrases
very
quick. Before we dive into me, please, I must, because when you first approached me, of course, I looked you over. But I don't believe in doing too much research into an individual because you never know what you find out there nowadays, right? And I'd rather give them their moment to show me who they are personally. And just in a few minutes before we even started this call, let alone from what I researched and going to your website, let alone your book, Your Past Has Passed, all the stuff you're doing for women right now, the fact that, as we discussed, you could run this show on your own with your own voice, your own material. You could do that, but you decided to provide a platform for other people who have kindred spirits who are running along the same thing to come on and give their voice as well. And I have to applaud that. I love it. It's awesome. Please don't ever stop.
You know, that's the encouragement. That's really the encouragement that I need, because sometimes, Jamar, I really wonder, you know, whether or not my little voice is even making a difference. Because sometimes we kind of feel like we're in a vacuum and we're just kind of out here in the, like John the Baptist, we're out here in the wilderness and we're just preaching and we're just saying all of this good stuff. But is anybody even hearing it? Is anybody being uplifted by it? So your words of encouragement to me are just very heartfelt, and I thank you for that. That gives me what I need to keep on going on this journey. So I thank you for that. Yeah.
I'm here. Thank you.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your passion. How did you go from corporate America to entrepreneurship? That's a big leap. That's a leap of faith right there. So tell us a little bit about your
As you stated before, even when I was going through my trials, I didn't realize my purpose earlier on. And I'm going to say I realized it in time. Because despite what I was going through, I always had to be helping someone because it felt good. It was good medicine for the soul, for my soul. So no matter what trials they were going through, whatever the pain point was, I wanted to help resolve it, period. And I'm talking back in, as a child, I'm talking 8 years of age, helping my peers or wanting to be around kids who were younger than me, trying to mentor at that age. And then by the time I hit middle school, I was actually consulting, for lack of a better word I can think of right now, high schoolers, high school students, male and female, on relationships and things like that. And I'm a child. And my mother could speak to this because we had many a deep discussion, and there was a few times she'd jump on that phone. You remember it was a corded phone. She'd yank it out my head, "Oh, listen," and pitch a fit because I'm talking to a mature crowd. And what she didn't realize at the moment until later is that my purpose was to help people. And that's all I was trying to do. Did I get into some mischief? And yeah, as a child, I did some things. But for the most part, when she caught me in those moments, and when I was talking to older people, what have you, it was true blue consultation. And that never left me. It never left. No matter what I was going through, that's what I had to do in order to be okay. Of course, it got to a point where my own trials overwhelmed me. You know, aside from the things I dealt with in my earlier youth as far as molestation, child abuse, and things like that, you know, all that stuff compounds and it just complicates life. And so as I got older, you only get exposed to more. You're only going to try more things, and you don't realize that you're just piling it on because you haven't resolved the issues from your youth yet. You haven't taken care of those issues. You haven't healed from them yet. So you're just piling it on. And I had a couple of breakdowns, and those are the points that led me to not want to be here anymore. Those are the points that told me that life wasn't worth living because I can't hold this up anymore. Still young, not realizing I'm adding a lot of this weight onto myself, and I wasn't a finger pointer either. So that made it that much worse because I took it all. It's all me. It's all my fault. So I'll jump forward a little bit through my domestic relationships and things like that. So I'm taking that baggage you talked about into these relationships. And, you know, it's one thing to help somebody outside of your home, which was my medicine. It's another thing when that person lives with you. And when you get into the environment where the two should become one, well, I was used to, once again, blaming myself. So if you're becoming me, I get to blame you too.
Oh.
And unfortunately, that's what led to me having the domestic issues that I did. And eventually I went through therapy. I went through counseling, with the spiritual counseling, professional counseling. You know, I got to lay back on the couch and did all that stuff, even got on medication eventually. And for some people, I know that that works. So you'll never hear me talk against traditional therapy or any therapy that works for somebody. It works for them. I'm not going to shoot down any of it. For me, it worked up to an extent. And I tell you, had I not hit that low where the therapy stopped working, where the what I was practicing didn't get me past a certain ceiling, I never would have had that moment where I broke down on the floor on my knees praying to God, crying out loud. My home was empty, fortunately. Why? Why me? Like, I love to help people. I love pouring myself into people. I want to do this. I do this. I do that. I do all this right. Why? I'm going to work now. I'm complimenting people. You know, I'm singing my own praise to defend myself because I don't understand this pain that I'm in. And it was almost, you know, immediately after I got done crying and yelling out to the point I was about hoarse, and I was so exhausted in that moment, it was almost like there was a tap on my shoulder. And I looked up. It's like, you're not doing anything unique, Jamar. You've been doing this all your life. So no matter how positive these things are, no matter how many people you've helped, you've been doing this all your life and still getting the same results, which is the definition of insanity.
That's right.
It's like, you want to get better, you want to feel better, you want to get rid of this pain, man up and increase that network of people you're trying to help. Do more. And that's where that started. And that's how I got out of the 9-to-5 mentality, because there's no way I can do more if I'm clocking in 9-to-5. Because I'm walking in on somebody else's schedule. They set the boundary. They told me what I can do. No matter how many people out there I feel need me, actually need me, I'm not going to be able to get to them through these hours.
That's right.
So what do I have to do? I got to check out.
Yeah.
And I appreciate my last employer. I really do. I owe him dinner. I've got one of my great friends that's with me on the speaking firm was with me at that job. And I told him if it wasn't for the boss man making the decision he did, because he actually provided a way for me to leave and start out independently. So I owe that man dinner. Somehow, some way, I'm going to get back to him. But that is pretty much how I got started on this journey.
You mentioned in your bio, it also speaks of suicide. And unfortunately, Jamar, that has become such a disturbing issue in our community, particularly with our young people. These kids are in their 20s, and you wonder what in the heck could be going on in your life and you are only in your 20s that would bring you to that point of suicide. So how did you come back? I mean, you were on the brink. When you're considering suicide, to me, you're on the brink. You can go either way. So what brought you back from that brink of suicide?
You know, one, I want to answer the question about today's youth. They're exposed to so much so early. They don't, you know, when we were coming up and we talked about being kids, it was different than how they're coming up and being kids. We didn't have access to all the information, to all the trash, all this stuff that we considered adult content. We didn't have access to it. And if we got access to it, we better sneak. We better break in somewhere. We better steal it, and we better hide it.
That's right.
And now it's just, it's at your fingertips. All you have to do is push a button, and you're there. So these kids get exposed to so much. They don't have a grace period where they can just be a child. They don't have that cycle of their life as a human where they can just be a kid anymore. They're immediately exposed. As soon as they can comprehend, they're getting hit with what we call adult content.
Right.
So they've got all this other pressure on them now. It's no longer, you know, you're the innocent, irresponsible child, because with information comes responsibility. And we're expecting these children, because genetically, if we could talk science, genetically they're not ready to take on an adult life. Their DNA is not prepped to take on an adult life. Yet we've given them all this information. Therefore, unfortunately, a lot of us, whether consciously or subconsciously, put that expectation of adulthood or handling adult responsibilities on these children.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll actually pause there. I'm sure I got to the point a long time ago, but for me myself, one thing I'll never do, despite being able to empathize, is I'll never tell anybody, hey, I've worn your shoes before. I feel how you feel. Because it's actually impossible to say that with 100% certainty. So I know when people say that, they have good intentions, and it's actually because they care. And I get that. But from this platform, just for me, I don't want to do that, because even at this point, if I approach somebody, which I have, who is suicidal, they know that I'm no longer in their position. They know I cannot sit down with them and we go back and forth about what we're feeling right now. They're like, you made it. And so sometimes people are resistant to the now what they consider the authority figure that's trying to help them. Because you already made it. You don't feel what I'm feeling. You don't know what I'm going through. Blah, blah, blah. And I get that. So when I talk about my history, it's my history. And I only tell them the story and what I went through as I'm about to do, so they see the correlation and they know the overall theme is you can make it through it. You can make it through it. And you're not by yourself. So when I was going through those situations, because I actually attempted to take my life 3 times, so I went beyond the thought. As a matter of fact, I didn't give myself time to contemplate suicide. It wasn't something that went on for months. You know, I didn't leave any letters. I didn't give any clues. When I thought about it, I was ready to do it. So the first time I did it, and I want to say I was in middle school or coming out of middle school. But, and I won't go get granular with it, but, you know, I decided to check out. And let me tell you something. My history, what had happened to me as a child, is what influenced my decision to commit suicide, but I wasn't in the midst of it anymore. The abuse and conflicting relationship I had with my father, I was out of that situation by this time. I was out of it. And what some people don't realize is that while some people are very much suicidal while they're in the moment because it hurts, it's painful, they can't see, there's a dark cloud, you're in the corner, you're backed in. Some people are very much suicidal in those moments. There's people that come out of those moments that are suicidal. And the reason why is because now I've gotten to where I need to be, which I was back with my mother. I'm happy with my mother. I'm at peace with my mother. It's like a ray of sunshine hit me. So all of this opens up. The air is clear. So what happens when I turn around and look back at what I just came from, I have to focus on that thing because there's nothing else to focus on. So if I'm ever disturbed, there's no other problems to complicate my vision. I'm completely focused on my past and what it was doing to me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people don't get that, even when you step out of that situation. I mean, everybody knows we still look back. We still deal with the fire we came through. We can still remember it. But some people who are fresh out of it, they're still looking at it, and they're very much so in pain, even though they're in a way better place physically, mm-hmm. at the least, I was.
Mm-hmm. And that's very true because when I speak with, mostly I work with women, and so when I speak with women and we talk about some of that baggage, and I give them a visual, you know, Jamar, we can hear a song, or we can smell a fragrance, maybe the perfume our grandmother wore, something like that, but particularly a song. You know, we can hear a song, and we may not know what we were doing when that song came out, but we know in our spirit that we were having a good time because we get a good feeling and a good memory. That song takes us back to that good time. Well, conversely, pain has the same effect. So that same song, that same fragrance, whatever that stimulus is, can take you right back to that point of anger so that you become just as angry out of the situation as you were while you were still in it. So I can relate to that very easily. Being a survivor of domestic violence myself, I can relate to that and how you can go back to that point and relive it, and the emotions that you experience are just as vivid and real as it was at the time that you were in it. And then you have conflicting emotions because you're out of it now, and so you're wondering and questioning what's wrong with you, why am I going through this when I'm not even in that situation anymore? So I thoroughly understand that. That's part of that baggage that we talked about. You know, you had that baggage as a very young child that hadn't been dealt with, and then as you got older, new baggage you got, and it just piled onto that old baggage. So I can definitely relate to that. So how have you been able to overcome those adversities that you faced? You know, particularly in your younger years, how have you been able to overcome those?
Definitely took a lot of prayer. But I'll also give it to my family, my children. And let me be clear, my trials didn't stop there, and that wasn't my last suicide attempt. As a child at that point, I got it wrong. I just didn't cut in the right place. That's what happened.
Oh, my.
And I'll tell you what shocked me out of it at that point. And I won't name up any names, of course. But my mother and my sister came home. They found me. They consoled me. We got over it in that moment. They gave me so much love. They cared for me so deeply that I told myself, I'll never do that again. Because I saw it hurt them, I had moved them. Somebody was called to come there to be a part, to have this intervention of sorts to help me through it. And they didn't come in a timely fashion. As a matter of fact, they didn't come to well after. We're all exhausted, we're all tired, it's in the middle of the night. They showed up, and this person is very, very close, family. They show up. And I'm like, oh, this means this has to reset. We got to start over. I'm okay. When they walk in, they just look at me. And so, you're going to kill yourself, huh? And they pull out a pistol, a revolver.
Oh, my.
And they show me the bullets. Well, if you were serious. And I can't tell you what else they said past that point. But I can tell you that that began my regression. And not so much back towards suicidal. I can say it got me there eventually. But in that moment, I went from being okay to hating this person once again. And going, what in the heck would you do that? This is stupid. You know, so it distracted me from this healing process because now I have something else to focus on.
Oh, my goodness.
I can laugh at it. It's still stupid, but I can laugh at it now. And I'll jump forward. Skipping the second time I attempted, because that had to do with history and school and pressure and all this stuff. The final time I would attempt to take my life, I was already married for the first time. I had my first baby girl, who I absolutely love. And what I didn't know and didn't realize was, and I told you how I viewed that domestic partnership, is that I was bringing all that baggage in once again. And we had issues between us. Our character flaws did not work out together at all. But with all of my problems, she had to carry that weight as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when things just wouldn't work out and it seemed like I was going to lose my family, matter of fact, there was a threat of I'm taking my child and I'm gone. That's when I said, I can't take that because my child was my only medicine. She was the only one keeping me going. I didn't really know that at the time because I've loved children all my life. I'm very passionate about children. At this time, my baby was the only one keeping me out of darkness because we had a lot of dark moments, but she already brought me back. So when that threat came up and I knew it was real, I said, I'm out of here. I can't take it. And this time I tried pills. And fortunately, unfortunate for my mindset at the time, but fortunately now, looking back, they weren't the type of pills that are going to take you out immediately. They might make you drowsy and put you to sleep. They won't kill you, but they'll shut your bladder down.
Mm-hmm.
So in my recovery, I realized how stupid my decision was, and I was reminded every time I wanted to use the bathroom because my bladder was shut down. So I'm sitting there having to go but can't go. So I'm going to say, and of course I realized what I did was completely wrong. I woke up out of that way quicker than I did as a child. But I was tortured back to sanity as well with my bladder being messed up. So
yeah.
I said, I don't ever want to make this mistake, especially get it wrong. You know, all these crazy thoughts are going through my head. And then...
Oh, God. Yeah.
And then to be put into a psychiatric ward. So I had to spend 2 days. And the only reason I spent 2 days is because I'm telling you, when I snapped out of that craziness, that moment I was in, I snapped all the way out, and the psychiatrist knew it. But when they put me in a psychiatric ward, and first of all, they didn't have the room ready for me. Because if you know anything about that, they've got levels.
Yes.
They have levels in there. And I'll leave it at that. And I was on one of the worst ones because they didn't have my room prepped on the one that was supposed to be for me. So I got to experience with people who have disabilities.
Yeah.
Who have real chemical imbalances. I got to witness what they go through. And then they took me up to the level I was supposed to be on. And then I got to witness other people who were prescribed medication that weren't to come off, who were put on a clock that had to answer to every single minute. And I'm and then I got to sit in the circle that they get in, talk about their day and what they and things like that. And when I was exposed to that,
yeah,
it brought me all the way back. And I said, I know better. Know better. So
yeah,
once I got out of there, I vowed I would never return. I would never return, period.
Yeah, because the sad part about it is in situations like that, when you miss, you end up in worse shape than what you
Absolutely.
Were before you even attempted. You still have whatever those issues are, but now
Yes.
because you messed up and you weren't successful at taking your life, you end up with more issues because you missed, in essence, and so you end up with more problems. And I think that a lot of times we do that in situations in life. We get to a point, you know, we can get to a very dark place. I can relate to you when you said your child was your lifeline. My children was my lifeline. I was in such a dark place at a point in my life, Jamar, that I was in an abyss. I didn't know how I got there, and I couldn't find my way out. And, you know, we create prisons in our mind. The greatest prison is not the incarcerated people that are locked up physically. The greater prisons are the ones that we create in our own minds. I mean, you know, we lock ourselves in a room and the windows are wide open. And so we can get to that place in our life where we are in such a dark place. And my children were my lifeline. I had two boys because I actually got to a point where I used to go to bed and I would pray, Lord, if you just kind of help me kill this man so I don't have to go to jail, because I have two sons, I need to raise my boys. So if you just give me a little help, Lord, and show me a way to kill this man. Now, you know, I was delirious at that point, asking the Lord to help me commit murder. You know, I was off the beam. But sometimes, Jamar, we get, you know, we can get to that point, and we do need a lifeline. And fortunately for you, fortunately for me, the Lord provided us with that lifeline, that one little rope, you know, hang on and don't let go. And that was our children to be able to do that. So out of all of this, came the Royal Apex creation. So how did that evolve? How did you go from that man that spent 2 days in the psych ward to creations?
Yeah, going back to what I knew was therapeutic for me, and going back to that moment where I broke down, which was post my suicide attempt, begging to get some answers as to why I was feeling so wrong and persecuted and damaged. You know, it was that moment that said, do more. You haven't done enough. How many people you think are on this planet that need help? And here you are, you know, in your little circle of influence, complaining like you've done enough. And so I was realizing that, you know, not only that was the truth, and that if you're somebody who realizes your purpose is to help people, then you get out there and help people, as many as you can. It's also realizing that is my therapy. And so if this feels good and this helps me feel successful, I should probably do way more of it. That just makes sense. Because when things were complicated, when things were piled up on me, well, when it feels bad, it just gets worse. The more you pile on, the worse it gets. But if this feels
right.
good and I keep doing it, well, it should feel better.
Right.
And so that was my selfish moment. My selfish moment was to be more selfless. And in that moment, even when I went independent and I decided to be this entrepreneur, I hadn't all the way committed to what we know now as Rack Speaks and to doing the speaking firm. Because I still had people running up who, and Linda, I'm a super passionate person. I am. I'm a filler. I love people. And like I said, if I heard a pain point, I wanted to resolve it. It didn't matter what it was. And people go, that's a little much. And I agree. It can be. But this is how I'm built. So when other people get a hold of that, when they figure out this is what your character is for real, you have people who want to use it to their advantage. Now, I'm not saying that all these people, their intentions were bad. I won't say that. But what I will say is when you see an asset and you can put it in your hand and use it, well, what would you do? That's what started to happen. All these projects will pop up and people needing help. And I'm an entertainer at heart. I was an artist for a decade. But I knew there was a need for starving artists, people who were great but just didn't know the business or needed somebody to support them to get. So that was one of the first things I tried as an entrepreneur. And what happened was these people had personal issues as well, and I would always end up connecting with them more on their personal issues than their business projects. But they would get the best of both worlds from me. Jump forward, I had presentations ready because I did want to speak. I spoke in college. I've spoken, and I love, heck, I've been speaking since I was probably 7 or 8 years old as a child, actually getting in front of an audience and speaking on the regular. So it's something that I knew I loved, something that complemented that other therapy of helping people. So I knew I wanted to speak. So I developed presentations. I had several off the bat as soon as I decided to go independent. But I shelved them because I was helping all these other people go after their dreams. And I was feeling good because they were feeling good. And they would praise me. I was like, I don't need praise because I don't believe in being praised for something I'm built for. Let's just go. And unfortunately, it got to the point where I really jeopardized my home helping someone. And when that happened, I had another one of those moments. I didn't break down as bad, but I had another one of those, all right, sit back, examine yourself and what the crap is going on. And that's what told me, all right, it's cool that you're accessible to so many, but you might want to get a platform where people can't just reach out and grab you as soon as they're ready because you want to help everybody. But I'm like, wait a minute, my purpose is to help. It doesn't matter the pain point. And I have people, even on my own team, that say, hey, man, you need to come up with a niche. You need to figure out what market you're going to go in. I'm like, nah, I don't want to do that. So the next step was I have to find people like me. I have to find people who are just as passionate, but maybe they do have a lane that they'll focus on, and that will help me too. Because if I know that other people out there are being helped, then I don't have to do it right. And now I have a group of seven. I have seven individuals, and I'm going to say their names. And I'm sure they're listening right now. But these individuals are very passionate about what they want to do and what they're doing and about people, which was very important. One is Barry Greer. Barry Greer's into realty investments. He loves it. He also has a passion for spiritual health. He wants to see communities become more spiritually healthy, children, anybody in need. Isaac Siddiqui, he's a financial consultant. This man has been dealing with numbers for over a decade. He worked for a very, very high-end financial firm for years, but now he works on one here in Nashville off Music Row. But he's all about teaching people financial security, how to protect yourself now and later, and stop worrying about what you've already done, what you've already exhausted. Let's work on now and protect you for later. Chris Daggs, and I told you I listened to your very last interview with Omar. Chris Daggs is a family member of mine, and he went away, spent some Fed time in prison, 12 years. And I am proud to say this man has been out, I believe, going on 6 years now, completely reformed. He's a husband, father of three adopted children and two biological. He's got a baby on the way. He's a homeowner. He's a hard worker. And every job this man has got, he's been in management. So he had to come on board. We know how powerful the message he has is. I've got another gentleman by the name of Joel Silman. Joel Silman has been around me since 2009. He's from Michigan, too. When I tell you, this man has been with me through some of my darkest hours, and even on this journey through entrepreneurship, and he's always been the voice of reason. Matter of fact, I don't know if they'll like this or not. I call Chris. I gave you Chris's background. That's my ride or die guy. And Joel is my drive and survive guy. He's not, now let me take the keys, bro. I know you're feeling the way. Let's talk this out. We're going to do what's right, whether you like it or not. That's him. But he's a financial consultant. He's done business-to-business investments and account management and graduated college. You know, these are established guys. But he has a passion to help youth, to help rehabilitate communities that have fallen or next to fallen that need to be developed to help change their perception of why they are in the place they are. And he actually does use fashion as one of his teaching tools. And it's just all, and it's unique. And anybody can actually step in there and listen no matter what social status they are. And I'm going to name two more, and these are the special speakers. And you'll hear why. There's Ozzie Leon, who's an OSU alumni. The man does live surgery broadcast. I mean, as he goes in there while they're cutting people open, and he films it. And the first time I heard it, I thought it was cool. Like, wow, man. Then I thought about it. I said, wow, man, that's crazy. You do that? That's what he does. And he's been in the medical field since he was 17 years old, so I'm sure, you know, he's kind of numb to it, and he does a great job. And he's in the film. He's very passionate about film, and he wants to teach youth about how to get into the film industry and how to I know nothing about it really, but how to go through certain processes correctly. And he also has a message about diabetes and how it affects the quote-unquote urban communities, you know, how it damages black lives and why we need to be aware and more informed about our health. And then last but not least, we have Roger Ryan. Roger Ryan is a music producer. He's a multi-Grammy Award-nominated, Dove Award-nominated, Juno Award-winning music producer. And when people see someone like that, or they see celebrity, most of the time they look at the person as a deity. They look at them like they don't have any problems. They got all the money. You know, they're good. But this man has history, and, of course, he could tell his story better than me. As brilliant as he is, he had to deal with that as a child. The brain he has now, he had as a child. He was advanced. He graduated school years before he should have. He was in college as a child. So positively exceeding expectations brings its own stress, because just like I said earlier about the youth of today, you start getting new expectations put on you that you may not be ready to handle, and he went through that. And so he has a story to tell as well. So these are the seven gentlemen who have joined me on this platform, and we join on one theme, and that's the passion to help others. And that's how RAC is in existence today.
So in all that you have been through in your lifetime, the good, the bad, the ugly, the ups, the downs, everything, what life lessons have you learned from your journey, and how have you been able to apply those lessons to your life today so that you can begin to love life and love and to be able to step in to what God created you to be?
One of the things you will hear me redundantly say is people need to realize what their success is. And I say that because everybody's success looks different. Everybody's DNA is different. So what makes you successful, and matter of fact, what makes you feel successful is different than what will make me feel successful. Once I realized that, I had to look at my own life, first of all, and say, wait a minute, Jamar, what were your successes? Because we always focus on the negativity. Matter of fact, mm-hmm. negativity is popular. We build shows and make songs based off negativity, bad things, you know. So, and I tell people, too, we are born into programming. And I'll get just a little nerdy here, no offense to the gamers, but I compare it to a video game. when you start that game as a new character, the world is already built, the boundaries are already set, the laws are already made. You are playing someone else's game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we come into the world. And you got your health bar, you got your health, but you better be careful because it only goes so far. I use that comparison because even when we talk about the health bar, you talk about it being used up. You have those moments in a game, and I like to share this with kids. You have those moments in a game where you find a health package or you get some bonus that builds your life back up. And that's just life. You're going through life's trials, and if you can overcome these situations, there's your successful moment right there. You just got healthier. And you have to keep going. You got to keep playing the game. Can you break down the boundaries of the game? Absolutely. You can even stop playing the game. Well, we're not talking suicide. We're talking about start a whole other game. Go somewhere else. Start another lane. And that all plays into people finding out what their success is. I say that there's somewhat of a stigma, and I say this loosely, somewhat of a stigma that comes with the word success, because when you say success to somebody, two things normally pop up, and it's going to be money, it's going to be career.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people
that's right.
focus on every time you say somebody's successful. And I say it's more, now if it is, because it is, that's some people's success. They feel great with a lot of money. They're at peace with it. So the only thing I would say is why. Why? To those
mm-hmm.
people. To everybody else, don't set yourself up for failure. Not that
right.
type. If you're going to fail, fail it. What success is actually going to bring, what your success actually is, going on that journey. Fail in that moment, chasing what's really good for you, not what's good for somebody else. Because somebody's success could be sobriety. It could be having
mm-hmm.
a stronger marriage. It could be anger management. It could be overcoming depression. There's so many other ways to view being successful. Because being successful, I mean, the word itself used to mean achieving a goal. That
That's
was
right.
it. But now you look at some dictionaries, and they do have basically financial stability or having an excess of finance, of money. And so what happens, look how many people are programmed to believe that way. Because
mm-hmm.
we're born into the programming. So it's our job, me and you, Linda, to get out here and shake these people up and say, hey, it doesn't have to be.
That's
not
right.
your success. Your success is here. But let's talk about it, because you have to actually answer some questions yourself. All we can do is provide an influence. We can stand up on a stage. We can stand in the center of a room. We can do this, whatever. We can provide an influence, but we can't change anybody. They have to, the same questions that we ask them, the same presentations that we give them, they got to take it home. They got to ask themselves those questions, and they have to answer them honestly. People can lie to us all day. Therefore, I'll even tell people in the presentation, I'll ask a question and say, you don't have to answer it, and you don't have to talk to the person next to you. That's for you to answer. That's
mm-hmm.
for you to answer.
That's right.
You can verbally lie to yourself, but you can't lie to yourself.
That's right. Now, deep down, you know when you're lying.
You know.
That's right.
You know.
That's
you
it.
Know.
Right.
You know.
And I think you made a point, because a lot of times that's what happens. We measure our own success by what we perceive someone else's level of success to be. And so
yes.
now that I haven't achieved what my neighbor has, or whatever the case may be, then I am not a success. And you made a good point. We have to identify what our own individual, unique definition of success is. And that's when we know that God's purpose is being revealed to us and we step into it. Because we reach that level of peace that you get when you have defined what your success is. You know, they say the hardest journey is finding yourself, and then the next hardest is liking what you find. So when we get to that point that God's purpose is revealed to us, we accept it and we step into it, that's when we reach that level of peace. Jamar, our time is kind of winding down, but I did want to ask you, what words of inspiration can you give someone in our listening audience who just might be facing adversities and just maybe going through some trials and some obstacles? What words of inspiration can you give to someone in our listening audience?
You're worth it. You're worth it. Your life is worth living. You're worth every success you can get. You're worth it. You are powerful. As human beings, you can say we're the chosen species, whatever you want to say, or you can take it down to the science. We are the most powerful creatures that walk this earth. That means something. A single cell in your brain rivals the most complex computer out there. A single cell, that's how powerful you are. So you're worth it. Whatever trials you're going through, whatever pain you're having, you're worth it. You're worth beating it. This is something I actually posted today, and I decided I was going to say this on your show, Linda, so thank you. But everybody's worth it. One's not better than the other. You just got to figure out what your success is.
Yes.
You're worth it.
Yeah, very good. So can you tell our listening audience how they might be able to contact you?
I sure will. You can contact Royal Apex Creations business line at 629-401-2303 or simply shoot an email over to info@royalapexcreations.com. info@royalapexcreations.com. And Miss Linda,
I want to thank you, Jamal. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I know you're about to close out, but I am so appreciative for you. I'm so thankful for this opportunity. And I want to send so many people your way. I want so many people to know who you are, because what you're doing is absolutely beautiful. And I hope we get to do this again, because I actually want to jump on with you on the subject that you're very passionate about, and that's empowering women.
Definitely, definitely. And we'll have a conversation after the show, most definitely. So I want to thank you for joining us this week. Be sure to join us every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time to hear from another phenomenal person. Or you can listen to our broadcast on blogtalkradio.com/discover-a-new-beginning. If you would like to be a guest on the show or you know someone who is phenomenal, please contact me at linda@lindahwilliams.com. So I leave you with this thought. That man is a success who leaves the world better than he found it, who has never lacked appreciation of Earth's beauty or failed to express it, who looks for the best in others and gave the best he had. That is a phenomenal man. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Jamar. We'll see you here again next week. You all have a good evening. Good night.